Are you on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles? Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than 20 bucks a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or if you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. Thank you once again to Loot Crate. Let's talk some NFL draft. What do you say? And that's right, Pro Football Weekly Podcast. What's going on? I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and grateful as always that you are back with me this week. And it's a big week here at the PFW Podcast Studio. We are putting the finishing touches on our updated draft magazine, the draft preview for 2017. We'll be going to the printer in the next 24 or 48 hours, and we can't wait to get it out to you. That magazine has a ton of updated reports and all the combine measurables, some new features, and just all the up-to-the-minute information that we were able to jam into this print version for you. So excited to get that to you. And excited for today's podcast as well, because I'm bringing on a close friend and also one of the best NFL draft analysts, one of the best NFL guys out there, period. That's Eric Edholm of the Shutdown Corner at Yahoo Sports. So we will bring him in momentarily, but just one more thank you to Luke Crate and for you to be here with me again this week. And I guess I would just mention that there are a lot of changes from that first draft magazine that we did to the updated version. Now we've got some risers and sliders. We've got some overrated and underrated players in there. So pretty excited to get that to you. And there's a lot of other good stuff on our website right now, www.profootballweekly.com. I released my first mock draft on Thursday. Pretty excited about that. There will be several more to come, but I got a few surprises in there for you. If you're a Raiders fan, I think you may be a little taken aback by the pick there. And a couple other fun ones as well. We've got an interesting rotation or an interesting order that the wide receivers come off the board. The quarterback order may surprise you a little bit as well. So make sure you check out that mock draft over at ProFootballWeekly.com. And one reminder, because sometimes I forget to do it, but if you like what you hear at the Pro Football Weekly podcast, head over to iTunes and make sure you are subscribing to us. We would love that if you left us a like, a comment, a share. All of those forms of interaction help us continue to reach as many of you as possible. So without any more kind of blabbering from me, I'm going to go ahead and bring on our draft expert for the day. And just make sure you're keeping it plugged into the Pro Football Weekly podcast in the coming weeks, because we are now going draft heavy. Once this magazine is at the printer, we're going to be doing updated scouting reports on the website as well. My colleague and I, Kevin Fishbane, will be breaking it all down, and I'll try and bring in some more guests as the draft gets closer. So again, without further ado, let's bring on Eric Edholm. It's a great pleasure to have him on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Eric from Shutdown Corner at Yahoo Sports. Eric, what's shaking?
Arthur, everything's good, man. We're closing in on the draft, not too far down the road. And, just grinding away, trying to get to know these kids and get to know what the teams are looking for.
Well, you are certainly doing an awesome job. And if you guys aren't already following Eric over at the Shutdown Corner and on Twitter, make sure you're doing so. I believe it's at Eric Edholm. Is there anything special about your handle, or just at Eric Edholm?
The only special thing is the underscore in between the C and the E. So E-R-I-C underscore Edholm, and there you are.
Thank you, sir. And Eric is counting down the top 50 prospects for Shutdown Corner. And before we get into a few of those, he was also out in South Bend yesterday for DeShone Kizer's Pro Day. I think the third of sort of the big three quarterbacks in this draft, although certainly Patrick Mahomes has entered that conversation as well. But before we talk about some of those guys and your thoughts on how they stack up, what'd you see in South Bend from Kizer, Eric? Did he help himself after kind of an uneven combine in a lot of people's eyes?
Yeah, I think he did, and you have to kind of consider the circumstances under which he was working, which, you know, for people who don't know what a pro day setting is like, you know, the NCAA rules don't allow anybody who's not already draft eligible to participate. So, right. You know, none of his top receivers from last season, you know, Equimania St. Brown or Torrey Hunter Jr., those guys couldn't participate. So, you know, he was throwing to people like Corey Robinson, David Robinson's son, who retired from football before, a kid who was an undrafted free agent, spent a cup of coffee with the Arizona Cardinals last year, Carlisle. The crazy name was Jonas Gray, who was the kind of the one game wonder for the New England Patriots about 3 years ago. And has really been out of the game pretty much since then. So he was back there catching passes and had never caught a pass from Kaiser before. So when you consider all these unfamiliar faces that he was throwing to, and that, you know, Gray got the script emailed to him a few days ago, I thought he did pretty well. I guess it was notable that in a season in which Kaiser was underthrowing a lot of passes and didn't seem to be getting his feet into a lot of throws, was the problem yesterday was the overthrows, and he had about three or four of those. But out of 63 passes, I thought about 60 were close enough to the mark, you know, 58 were good. And you know, so I thought he threw the ball pretty well, all things considered.
Okay, and I understand there was obviously a good NFL contingent out there in South Bend, of course, although I don't think the talent really compares with what was coming out last year, of course, and maybe that was part of Kaiser's troubles when you don't have a Ronnie Stanley and a Will Fuller and some of these guys. But, Eric, in your piece you write about his footwork in particular and that being a big point of emphasis after some people being a little bit critical in him going through the positional drills at the Combine. You thought it looked smoother, and what else did you see? I think he was working a lot from under center, which I know is a big departure from what he did under Kelly as well.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of noted that of the script, I would say it was about 80-20 center versus shotgun. I mean, they still mix in some shotgun throws, but that was about the inverse of what he did in college. You know, it was mostly, it was about 80-20 shotgun, so maybe even more than that. But yeah, it was a spread offense system, maybe one a little bit more advanced in terms of reading the field than some of the other spread systems that are, you know, have a lot of predetermined reads or half field reads or that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, that was something that I think scouts wanted to see. And I asked Kaiser about the script, and he and Zach Robinson, who was a Patriots draft pick years ago, is a quarterback coach now. You know, they wanted to make sure they mixed in plenty of play action stuff, rollouts, 7-step drops, 5-step drops, the quick game as well. And do so from dropping from center. And that was what I think NFL scouts wanted to see. They put it into the script. It made a lot of sense. And he looked pretty good, especially with these guys who are still, you know, he was trying to kind of mesh with on the fly in a lot of cases. And so, you know, Kaiser stepped into his throws. I mean, he can flick it. I mean, he's a big kid. You know, he weighed in at 237 yesterday. He kind of told me that's right at the high end of where he wants to be, 233, 237. I mean, he was up around 250 by the USC game at the end of the year, and he really bulked up. He took a lot of hits, and I think it affected his throwing a little. I just awkward angles at times, and so cleaning that up and making sure he doesn't kind of dip his shoulder when he throws to the left, those are the things that I think he's put the most time into.
Okay, interesting. And here at Pro Football Weekly, our draft expert, Greg Gabriel, is extremely high on DeShone Kaiser, says he doesn't think he's going to be the first guy drafted, but he does think he's going to be the best quarterback from this class probably in 3 years down the road. I think that speaks to some of the things you're talking about with the size and the athleticism and the arm strength, certainly, but I think undoubtedly needs some more work like some of these other guys. Eric, toward the end of your piece, you had an interesting comp, and I don't think you were saying, you know, they're mirror images by any means, but the name you used, I believe, is Ben Roethlisberger. Can you just explain to the listeners what you see similarity-wise between Kaiser and Big Ben?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, big frame, the ability to throw on the run, some toughness. You know, somebody in, you know, Kaiser took a lot, you know, they ran a lot of, you know, power option stuff, and he was taking hits and, you know, certainly can move around the pocket and create a little bit. I mean, I wouldn't say my comp for him is exactly Ben Roethlisberger, which I know you were saying it that way, but yeah, I mean, I could find other people. I mean, he might be closer to Steve McNair. Maybe he doesn't have that rare, you know, toughness and just that elite competitiveness that McNair had of him through his career. But body-wise, you know, arm talent-wise, skill-wise, that's kind of who he reminds me of a little bit. And so, you know, maybe he'll never be that guy who makes those just sort of jaw-dropping scrambles and plays like that. Sure. But I think he has that kind of physical ability. So, yeah, and, Todd Haley was there, Steelers offensive coordinator. And, you know, Ben keeps dropping these hints about, well, I don't know, it could be the last year. So I happen to think he's going to be a late first-round pick, possibly an early second-rounder. And like Greg, you know, I think you have to be patient with him. He's, you know, he regressed last season. He's only played, you know, parts of two seasons. I think he's still got a lot of, you know, fundamental work he's got to do. I think he's got to be challenged by his coaching staff. There was a sense of the piece too much, but, you know, there was a sense that he kind of challenged the coaching staff at times. And I think he needs to be pushed by a real strong-minded quarterback coach or a head coach or an offensive coordinator, whoever that might be, to kind of get the most out of him, you know, like a Bruce Arians or a Todd Haley or somebody like that who's kind of an alpha dog a little bit.
Maybe possibly Bill O'Brien too, right? I've seen a lot of Houston Kaiser connections as well. I know a tough guy who doesn't take a lot of nonsense. Eric, I don't believe you were in Chapel Hill or at the Clemson Pro Days, but I know you've always got spies everywhere. Now that we've got the three big ones in the books, and I think we should tell the listeners, I'm sure they know already, these Pro Days are great and they're important, but it's the private workouts where these teams really get opportunities to dig in, especially at the quarterback position. But this is what we have to go off so far. How did Kaiser stack up in your eyes against Watson and Trubisky and what they did in front of the big NFL contingents in the past couple weeks?
It is funny to hear varying reports, and you know, you hear people say, oh, I thought he threw the ball great, or somebody says, it was okay, you know, so. So you do hear kind of a swath of reports. I think by all measures, you know, all those guys at least impressed some of the teams that were there, and there was obviously a bigger contingent at Trubisky. He's probably the bigger unknown, even more so than Kaiser, just because he only had the 13 college starts, and people are trying to gather every little morsel of information and watch every throw he takes, and they'll do the private workout stuff with him. They watched him closely at the combine, et cetera. So when you don't have the game tape, which is a number one, the most important thing, you know, you don't have a ton of it. You've got to go back and find every other resource you can. So, you know, I think Trubisky and I think both Watson and Trubisky go ahead of Kaiser. And I'm starting to think that Mahomes will too. And I just, it's more about which teams want the guy. I know that sounds obvious, but you know, if you look at, let's say, you know, 20 draft boards, you could see Kaiser ahead of Mahomes on 15 of them. But if one of those five teams says, we want this guy, we love him, and there are a lot of varying, you know, degrees of love with this guy. Some think he's outstanding, he's ready to go. Others say, oh my gosh, it's a work in progress, he's going to drive somebody nuts.
Sure.
They still could take Mahomes ahead of him. So, you know, just because a guy gets drafted ahead of somebody else doesn't mean he was the consensus top pick at that spot. So I know I'm kind of talking in circles here, but
it's
going to be interesting. There's a lot more buzz on Mahomes right now than there is on Kaiser. I'll put it that way.
Okay. And, you know, you used a word a few moments ago with Kaiser, just talking about patience. Is that the operative word for this quarterback class overall? I mean, I think it is. I'm guessing you'll agree, but none of these guys obviously anywhere near finished products. So teams will have to be patient once they get them on board. But how patient are they going to be at the top of the draft? Are the 49ers going to take a quarterback? Is someone going to surprise the Jets? Are there going to be a couple gone in the top 10, do you think? Or is this more a kind of into the teens type of class?
Yeah, it's tough to say. You know, you always have in the back of your mind, you know, you remind yourself, quarterbacks tend to go earlier than maybe they should or than we expect them to. So you always think that. But you're right. I mean, if San Francisco passes on a quarterback at number two, and, you know, they're the tipping point. Bears are next at three. Obviously, they need, you know, probably need one more as well. We don't know where they'll go. But, you know, those two spots, if they both pass on quarterbacks, then all of a sudden you're thinking, is it Jets at six? Do the Saints surprise? You know, Saints done a lot of work on quarterbacks. Do they surprise at number 11, assuming they still have that pick? You know, are there other teams in there that could move up or down? And, you know, it's hard to say right now. I tend to think, and obviously the Browns are you know, two of the top 12 picks. We believe they're going Myles Garrett one. But what do they do at 12? Are they still going to have that pick? Do they try to still make a trade for Garoppolo? Is that even possible? So it's really difficult to say right now. Until we get that first sort of domino to fall, which is, I assume, you know, either the final nail in the Garoppolo coffin or he gets dealt, it's going to be really tough to say how that all works out. I think three will probably go in the first round, and one will go very early in the second round. So my guess right now would be Watson, Trubisky in some order, one or two, those guys will flop. Mahomes somewhere in the middle of the first round, you know, in the maybe the mid-20s at the latest, somewhere in that range. And then I think Kizer will go somewhere between the 32nd pick via trade or the Saints stay there and take him, you know, down to where, you know, kind of the Bears are picking at 35, somewhere in that little, you know, that range right there. That's just my best guess at this point.
Eric, if the Browns can't land Jimmy Garoppolo, are they going to say after the fact he wasn't a fit, like Michael Porter Jr. isn't a fit with Washington?
I love the discussion, right? I love being able to work in him and do basketball comp here. Yeah, but yeah, no, they're obviously like Garoppolo a lot. They've had a hard time, you know, hiding it. They're trying to even subtly trying to pressure the Patriots into giving them up. And, you know, who knows how this thing ends. But, yeah, they're going to, you know, the Terrell Pryor thing ended strangely. You know, they could have brought him back. They could have had him if they really wanted to.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to sort of say how this regime is going to handle things. But, you know, if they can't get Garoppolo, I mean, they have to do something. And it just saying, okay, we're going to have, you know, the cast of characters we have, and then we'll draft Josh Dobbs in round four. That's not going to cut it, I don't think. There's no guarantee they'll be back for Sam Darnold next year. I'm really fascinated to see what will happen if they can't get Garoppolo.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and obviously they've positioned themselves to frankly, give up whatever Bill Belichick says he wants.
Yeah.
So it'll be a fun kind of dynamic as it continues over the next couple of weeks and maybe even longer. But, Eric, you also wrote, you're doing this top 50 draft countdown. It's awesome, and everyone should check it out, of course, at the Shutdown Corner at Yahoo. And today's prospect is I think he's probably the most controversial in the draft. You tell me if I'm wrong on that.
Yeah.
Joe Mixon, where do you have him at number 34, I believe it is. Did I have that right? Yes.
Yeah.
I think at number 34. Talent-wise, for a moment, let's just forget the off-field stuff. If it didn't exist, how much higher than 34 is he on this list?
I mean, you could argue he's one of the, you know, 10 best pure football players in this draft class. I mean, I know running back is one of those positions everybody says you can wait on. And, you know, I also know that people say, well, look at what Ezekiel Elliott did last year. He was the fourth pick. I mean, you can have that debate all day long. But if we're just strictly talking talent, I mean, he's right up there with Leonard Fournette as the best back in this class. And he's a different back than he is. He can run a wheel route and scoot by a linebacker. He can... You know, he can pick up a blitz. He's not the powerful, you know, engine that Fournette is as a runner, but he can hit it. You know, he can get in there and mix it up a little bit too. His patience reminds me of Le'Veon Bell. You know, he'd be great in a zone scheme, and he'd be fine in a gap scheme too. I mean, he does it all. And obviously, like you said, the off-field issues are going to cloud that, and a team has to now probably go to ownership and say, can we draft this guy? And if so, you know, at what point? Because the optics are different for a first-round pick versus a second-round pick or whatever. So,
right. Yeah,
the talent is there. I mean, you can flip on almost any game, but the Texas Tech game is insane. I mean, granted, this is a terrible tackling defense that he went against, but, I mean, just watching him scoot around on that field was incredible, and capped his career with a big, big bowl game. And, yeah, I mean, whatever you want to say about the guy personally, the dude can play.
Yeah, a special talent, and like you said, I think what maybe makes him stand out is that there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of weaknesses in his game on the field. Eric, I'm guessing there's at least a handful. I mean, I would imagine the Ravens, at least one. How many organizations is this conversation just a non-starter?
Yeah, I mean, when you heard Ozzie Newsome a couple years ago or a year ago.
Right, at the combine.
We're just not going to take these kind of players. Obviously, the Ray Rice situation. You know, you can probably cross him off their list, even though he's the kind of back that the Ravens would love, you know, all things being equal. So, yeah, I think they're probably one of them. Other teams, you know, like the New York Jets, I don't believe will take him. There's a few other teams that I think have taken kind of a hardline stance. But for every one of them, there's also a team like the Detroit Lions, who, you know, Bob Quinn had the whole, what was the quote,
a non-starter or just,
yeah, well, he was just saying at first when he took the job that, you know, domestic violence, handguns, we aren't taking these players. Now he's revised his statement, and then at the combine he's sort of lamenting that Joe Mixon wasn't there, so
right. They
can't question him. So he's walked back his stance on that. And I think a lot of teams have. You know, two-plus years have now passed since Greg Hardy and Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson. Nobody's talking about Peterson's past now. They're talking about whether he can play in the NFL anymore. So,
yep.
you know, attitudes have changed. I mean, that's just the state of the what's going on right now. And I think, you know, the fact that, you know, that Mixon's incident happened 2 years ago. Yes, I know the tape was just recently released, but the longer we go on with this thing, I think the more comfortable NFL teams are, whether that's right or wrong, and even whether Mixon has even convinced them that he's a good dude or not. I mean, that's the most interesting part to me, is that there are still teams out there who feel like he hasn't really truly shown remorse for the incident that happened. So that's the fascinating part, and he could still be a top 40 pick.
Man, and that last part is what just sounds so concerning. I mean, with all of this in front of him and at least having to put on a good face for these teams, if some aren't convinced he's done so, that to me would be troubling.
Yeah.
But then, of course, and I know everyone, it's a natural connection, is the transcendent year that Tyreek Hill just had, obviously, and there's probably 31 other general managers who are just absolutely steaming that they weren't the ones that took a chance. But what Hill was like in the 160s, right? Late in round five or the latter part of round five. So I think that all certainly seems to go into the equation. Spending a few more minutes here with Eric at Home, Shutdown Corner. Eric is a good friend in addition to being one of the best NFL analysts out there. And I'm curious what you think about the cornerback position, Eric. I know everyone was talking about how special it potentially is. And at the same time, I'm wondering if the bloom is off the rose just a little bit when you look at a couple of these pro day injuries. There's been an arrest in there. Tease DeBoer running really slow at the combine. Does it feel like maybe a little bit of the luster is worn off with some of these events over the past month?
Yeah, I think more than anything, right? Obviously, like you mentioned, Jordan Lewis from Michigan has really kind of fallen off the board with the domestic violence stuff.
Yes.
He struggled in the bowl game, didn't have a great workout, so he slides way down. Sidney Jones from Washington suffers an Achilles injury at his pro day, which is just awful. You know, he might be out of commission for 6 months. Fabian Moreau from UCLA doing a bench press, because Lord knows we need to see a cornerback on the bench. I mean, if we don't have that, what are we going to, how are we going to evaluate these guys? I'm kidding, of course. But, yeah, so now he's out with a torn pec for maybe 4 months. And all those will affect their draft status. And so no question those guys get badly hurt by those things. But I feel like there's enough depth here where, somebody else is going to take their place and slide up. Now, maybe the Philadelphia Eagles don't go corner at 14. Maybe there's some of those teams in the mid-first that are a little bit more, skittish and think, well, wait, we'll punt till the second or third round, even if we need the position. But, yeah, I mean, Tabor's a fascinating study. Like you said, he had a terrible workout in Indy. But, man, when you watch his tape, I mean, that dude has some Josh Norman in him. I mean, he baits quarterbacks. He's confident he can match up against anybody. But with the athletic stuff, he looked like a third rounder. I mean, I don't know. So there's a lot of questions for sure. And there may be more number two and three corners in this class than there are true number ones. But the depth is exceptional. I think there will be 50-plus drafted. I mean, we're going to see maybe as many as, a dozen taken in the first 50 picks, I think. Or maybe not that many now with Jones, but certainly 10. I mean, and Moreau probably would have been a high second. Adoree Jackson could be a late first rounder now. I mean, I just think there's enough talent there and there's enough length with guys like Rasul Douglas and some other guys down the line, Akella Witherspoon from Colorado, and Awuzie, his teammate, I think will go really high too. So I think the first three rounds are going to be dominated by corners, even with those three incidents.
Yeah, a lot of chances for teams to improve, obviously premium position. Eric, let me ask you though, is this going to be it seemed like actually after the few big names dropped out, the bowl game absences didn't really pick up quite as much traction as maybe some thought. What do you think, though, about these pro day injuries and how it may affect prospects' thinking moving forward? Will it be a factor?
Yeah, that could be the next thing to go. And teams, players who either, have enough private workouts set up or have enough, did enough at their combine, they'll say, all right, I'll skip on this. A lot of guys will have the big combine and they only do the on-field portion of the workout. Well, Sidney Jones tore his Achilles on the final play, the final rep for DBs out in Washington. I mean, it's tragic when you hear it. It's like, my gosh, if he'd just gone to get a Gatorade or something, he'd be fine. But, Yeah, so I think that's the next thing to go, especially some of the elite guys, you know, and it trickles down from there. But, yeah, I think a lot of guys will say, I'll work out at the combine or I'll only work out at my pro day. So one or the other they're going to start punting on.
Eric, it's an awesome conversation. I've only got a couple minutes left. I do want to ask you quickly, though, about another defensive back who has to be among the more intriguing prospects in this draft. And it seems like you've kind of had your finger on the pulse of what's going on with Obi Melifonwu. You've had some quick numbers from his pro day, tweeted out that a lot of teams are that he did work out both as a corner and a safety. Just break down Melifonwu for us, and if you think it makes sense for him to transition from corner to safety with that insane physical skill set and the athleticism to boot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he kind of came on my radar late in the season and then, you know, got the invite to the Senior Bowl. We saw him down there and, you know, played safety, but they also put him at press corner. He looks fluid doing it. And you think, whoa, okay. Yep. You know, this, and I thought he was 6'3 back then. They measured him at the combine at 6'4, you know, 220 plus pounds, and he's running like a deer out there. He goes to his pro day, turns in an incredible shuttle time, you know, and just you think, my goodness, the range, the possibilities. And yeah, what I've been able to gather is that it seems like about 70% of the teams who are looking hard at him are looking at him as a safety. The other 30 want to try him as a big, long press corner, you know, especially for teams that play in divisions with, you know, those big, tall receivers. And maybe that's the kind of thing. Or even possibly a smaller tight end who can, you know, can match up over. So, you know, I think he'll probably be a safety, just the numbers suggest that. But if he's going to get overdrafted, it's probably as a corner, if that makes sense. Because, I mean, I still think that most teams have Malik Hooker and Jamal Adams ahead of him as a safety. But there could be some team, especially with those cornerback injuries, somewhere in the, you know, the late teens that just says, this is the kind of guy we want. And, you know, we know Pete Carroll, you know, has long loved those type of guys. There are other teams out there. The whole Atlanta, you know, Dan Quinn coaching tree is now taking off a little bit too. So there are plenty of teams out there that run that type of scheme that could use him in that way. And yeah, he's a special kid. I mean, his tape is sometimes ordinary, but he has, you know, he had a 24 tackle game last year. He had a 2-pick game against Temple. He's had some big performances. I don't think he's a complete product, but he's a special talent.
And I think that's what's exciting about him, too. If you look at it that way, that he's not a complete product, it just seems like his best football is definitely in front of him. It seems like he's an improving playmaker and really was turning a lot of heads at the Senior Bowl, and obviously that has continued. Just one more quick one for you in kind of the tweener category, and then sure, I'll let you go for real, Eric. And Obi Melifonwu is not a tweener because he's going to be a great prospect at either of those spots.
Right.
Jabril Peppers is causing a little bit more trepidation. Where are you on Peppers? Do you worry about the lack of ball production? Do you worry about the tweener traits? And what are NFL teams thinking? Because I know you're talking to a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, if you play him at safety, you're playing him in a new position. I mean, he's been a corner and obviously a great return man and offensive player too. But I mean, put that to the side for a minute. He's been a corner and a linebacker essentially. So, you know, he's going to be playing somewhere in between the two positions. And I think he definitely has the athleticism and the, you know, the football savvy and the IQ to play it. But, you know, you've got to have a pretty clear idea of what you want to do with him and the role you want to play. For instance, the Washington Redskins, I give them credit. They drafted Sue Cravens in the middle of the second round last year. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wait, drafting what? A nickel safety linebacker? What are we, like, and I love Sue Cravens, but I didn't know exactly how he fit into that defense. But they had a real clear vision of how they wanted to use him. They played him the way they wanted to play him. It worked out pretty well. When he was healthy, he played well. When he didn't have the issues with the concussion and all that stuff. So, you know, that's, I think, what it's going to take. And, you know, it's funny. I've gone back and forth on this thing. I thought, man, he's just too special an athlete. He's going to go in the first round. But now I've kind of hedged on that one a little bit. And it wouldn't stun me at all to see him go in the first 10 picks in the second round. And, you know, they're different players, but it kind of reminds me a little bit. It sort of reminds me of what happened to Landon Collins a couple of years ago, where everybody said, boy, you know, he has some lapses in coverage and he's not a complete safety, but, oh, he's got these instincts. You know, and he went at the top of the second round, and he's ended up becoming a pretty darn good playmaker. And that's the kind of player I think Peppers could end up being. And, I mean, different styles, but sort of the same thing where he goes 35th or 6th and ends up being pretty darn good.
Okay, interesting. And as you just said, suffice to say, if it turns out as well for Peppers as it did for Landon Collins last season, whatever team drafts him is obviously going to be pretty pleased. Eric, so much great information here, and we're so appreciative of you being so generous with your time. Let me just ask you, because we're both, we shared a hallway at the old Pro Football Weekly, and we have similar music tastes, and the big summer events are starting to surface. We've already talked about Fish and plans there. Anyone else catching your eye? Are you going to try and go see Dead and Company? Or have you seen the Pitchfork lineup? What else has jumped out at you on the Chicago festival or lineup slate?
Well, like you, the children have now arrived, and it's a little trickier to get out as much as it used to be when we were young, single, and stupid, I guess. But yeah, I think maybe Tom Petty. I haven't seen him in a decade or something like that. I mean, I think that the Dead show is a possibility. Fish, maybe I can squeeze 2 out of 3 nights, pulling as many favors as I can with the wife and. I don't know. I got to do some planning here. I've got the draft coming up, so I've got to focus on that. But music is right around the corner. So you and I need to talk a little more on the side, I think.
Yeah, good point. Thank you for keeping me focused. We'll keep each other focused for a few more weeks. Eric, thank you again. That is the great Eric Edholm of Shutdown Corner at Yahoo Sports. And thank you again for coming on. It was awesome, and I hope we have you back soon.
Appreciate it, dude. Talk to you real soon, man. Thanks.
All right. Once again, that is Eric Edholm on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. And make sure you're checking out his work on Twitter at Eric_Edholm and over at Yahoo, the Shutdown Corner. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did with Eric Edholm, and I hope you could humor me for a moment while I dropped in a couple of Mizzou references, a little bit of jam band and music conversation very quickly there at the end. But we'll bring Eric on again soon, and we'll be back again next week, obviously, talking more draft. I do have a couple thank yous that I need to mention before we get out of here. Once again, to Loot Crate, our wonderful sponsor, and to Eric, of course, from Yahoo for being with us, and a huge thank you to Dan Mott, our producer, who I did not mention at the top of the show, but Dan is the only reason that we come to you so crystal clear every week, and we appreciate his hard work. And his hard work also includes just awesome video scouting reports up on the website. So we are coming at you from every different medium possible. We've got writing, we've got podcasts, we've got videos, we've got radio. Make sure you're checking out what Dan Mott is doing. We've already got like 30 of the top prospects in the can. They are going up frequently over at ProFootballWeekly.com. So, a thank you to Dan, and a thank you to Luke Crate, a thank you to Eric. The biggest thank you, though, goes to you for being with us again this week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish. Just appreciative you guys are here. I hope you have a great weekend. Happy Friday. We'll look forward to being back with you next week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.